Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The biggest convention of its kind ever in the UK, Wrestling MediaCon 2018, is heading to Manchester on the 8th and 9th of September. Wrestling MediaCon 2018 will feature live wrestling shows from Revolution Pro and Impact Wrestling, meet and greet with all the talent, panel discussions from the likes of Inside the Ropes, and workshops on how to get into the world of professional wrestling from former WWE writers and bookers. There will also be guest matches from Defiant, NGW, and an NWA World's title defense by Nick Aldis, taped for £10 of gold. Other names announced for Wrestling MediaCon 2018 include The Wrestling Observer's Dave Meltzer, Colt Cabana, Sean Waltman, Cultaholic, Botchamania, myself and Ollie from The Wrestle Ramble, and many more to be announced. Wrestling MediaCon comes to the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England on the 8th and 9th of September. Tickets are available now from WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I'm Ollie Davis, I'm joined by Luke Owen, but today we have a special treat for you, Swaff Nation, Pod Swaffers, whatever you are. We will have the SmackDown review coming up right now, but after that, we have our podcast exclusive review of Avengers Infinity War, which isn't even on general release yet. That happens tomorrow, but Luke and I were lucky enough to see it last night. So, it's spoiler free, so don't worry, you won't have any big plot points spoiled for you. But if you prefer not to know anything at all about Infinity War before you see it, don't listen to it. Don't listen to the outro. But we'll see you after the whole SmackDown review with Infinity War in a bizzle. And speaking for myself, I like Ronda Rousey. I think she's got a great mean face. I think she's got a slick armbar. I like Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler now. I think they merge their two movesets together very well and smartly. However, every week since WrestleMania, there is one thing that I keep thinking about, and that is how bloody awesome Shinsuke Nakamura is, and now he has added a new dimension to his heel turn. He's got new heel version of his entrance music, and his performance, his storylines, his overall presentation is on fire right now. I think he's one of the best things, not just in WWE, but in wrestling as a world landscape. What about you, Luke?
100% agree.
Thank God, I thought he's fine.
He's fine. No, I completely agree. He's one of my favourite things on SmackDown at the moment. He's one of my favourite things in WWE at the moment. And I didn't really think that this was a needed thing, but the heel version of his entrance theme, it's just like, as soon as it came out, I was like, oh, well, that's perfect, isn't it? Like, that was like the cherry on top of what it needed, because it's the perfect heel version of an entrance theme, in that it's the exact same entrance theme, but it's slightly darker, and they've just added something to it. And Corey Graves even said, oh, he put lyrics over it because he didn't want fans singing along with his entrance music anymore. And I was like, oh, that's great! Because if people sing along with his entrance theme, that makes him seem like a babyface. Now people can't do that. We used to enjoy doing that. Oh, you dick, you took that away from us.
It's such an important line, yeah. It's not just about we can't sing along now. It was Shinsuke's demand that he took that away from us. Perfect, perfect heel mentality. And my lady partner, who only really enjoys entrances, so like most of the WWE universe.
Exactly.
I played it to her this morning. I was like, look what they've done to your favourite song that isn't Carmella's. And she was like, who, Violin Man? And I was like, yeah, yes, Shinsuke Nakamura, Violin, whatever, okay. And watch it. And she's about 30 seconds in and goes, I don't like it. Sounds mean. And I was like, Yes, exactly.
Sounds meaner.
You're being worked. You're a Memphis audience member right now from the 80s.
It's just a really excellent presentation. You and I were watching it before we came in to record this.
Like the actual
presentation of like this band playing it, and it's like, oh, I've hired this Japanese band to sing in Japanese. So you can't even sing along with the words in the song either, because you don't speak my language and I don't speak English. And like it's just a wonderful, wonderful presentation. It looks really cool. Every time I see you like a band play like that, my first instinct is like, man, I wish I was still in a band. Like, I really wish I hadn't quit playing
music. I just wish I was Japanese when I see them play. Like, yeah. It's just such an awesome presentation. And, you know, one of my big hates of the Kevin Dunn era, you know, if the one thing I would bring back, not just the one, there's many things, I'm being hyperbolic, but I really, really, really do miss how videos, how Titantrons used to be a part of the overall entrance of something.
Mm-hmm.
Like DX, when they faded, cross-faded over those weird shots. Jericho had the similar thing with the blurred streets, what do you call that effect? Time-lapse. Undertaker, you know, dong, he's here. Mm. Taz, the heartbeat. I used to love how you would get a full-screen video and then it would cut into the arena, and then they make the entrance. And I was more obsessed, like, when what game was it came out, because it on the old THQ N64 games for WWF, you'd have blurred image,
yes,
Titantron videos,
because the N64 couldn't handle video.
And I was mesmerized by that. And when the was it SmackDown, just bring it on the PlayStation, which was kind of the first one that did it,
the two SmackDown games had actual videos, because the PlayStation, because it was on discs, could run video.
Oh, and I was obsessed with getting my entrance, and it was all about the video. And this is what they've done here. They cut to some people plugging, it's the band plugging in their instruments, the sound mixer being moved around, and then they start playing, and then it cuts back into the live arena where Shinsuke makes his entrance. I just think it's an awesome presentation.
Yeah.
I wish they did it more for other wrestlers, that style of, because the video is such a huge part of getting them over. And now it's just like, most of the times it's just someone's name.
I was going to say, they literally just put your name up in some sort of fancy text. Sometimes just Comic Sans, or you know, or like it doesn't look, it's on an MS Paint, but like it's just a name.
Yeah, so you've got to like try and, if you're a new viewer or a casual viewer who's not as familiar with everyone, you've got to work out their entire character just based on a font if you're going by the video, which they don't really use. However, you know, this way you can have, I know Shinsuke doesn't have it, but I used to love watching the finishing moves get timed up perfectly to the music, and I'd be like, ah, that's their signature moves. Boom, look, he hit so many Stone Cold Stunners.
Yeah.
I know that doesn't relate to this example, but I'm hopeful that it will expand out. I thought it was, it's terrific. And like you said, if you said to me, oh yeah, we're going to put lyrics over Shinsuke Nakamura's entrance music, I would have gone, are you insane? It's one of the best things. Even if he turns heel, don't touch it. But I'm happy to be wrong. I'm happy to be wrong.
It's funny because you and I have talked about, like, they've done, you know, a number of heel turns since you and I have been doing the Wrestle Ramble, which is over a year now we've been doing this show. And we've had some heel turns. And I've always said, what I like when a wrestler turns heel is when they get a heel version of their entrance music. And we haven't really had that. Like, Sami Zayn didn't get a heel version of his entrance music. He just got the same entrance music. But he just changed the way that he did his entrance to make his babyface music now just sound obnoxious.
Yes.
And now just go like, oh, what an idiot. What an idiot face. But I love when a wrestler gets their heel version of an entrance music. And this is just, it's one of the best examples of it. It's just really, really cool. As I said, the presentation is awesome. I really like Nakamura. Like, you know, he squared off against AJ Styles, just tagging out straight away. I love the finish of the match with the Kinshasa to the back of the head, which makes it just seem more vicious and deadly. And then like the beatdown afterwards with a phenomenal ball arm and the double Kinshasa to Anderson.
So you are talking about the main event of this week's SmackDown, which was Shinsuke Nakamura and Rusev Day, Rusev and Aiden English, taking on AJ Styles, which was set up earlier in the night, wasn't it, where Renee Young was outside Shane McMahon's office.
Mm-hmm.
Why not Paige's office?
Well, neither of them were there, so it didn't really matter either way.
Well, just put Paige's name on it then.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
She's the general manager. Why are people going to Shane? Because he's a man.
Because he's a man. Right. Bloody patriarchy.
So AJ walks out instead of an actual authority figure, and he's happy. And he says, oh, I've got a chance to soften up
Shinsuke Nakamura
ahead of Greatest Royal Rumble on Friday. But it's going to be a six-man tag because he's got his cronies Rusev Day. So I've got to go and find two tag partners of my own. And I was, because I'm an idiot, I just thought, oh, I wonder who those will be. Genuinely just thought, I bet we'll find out when it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. But did he say
it'll be too sweet.
Yeah, that's it. And I was like, oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Later on, when Renee Young tried to talk to Nakamura about this on his dressing room door, Aiden English came out and said, no interviews.
Yeah.
Which is good. So the Rusev Day and Nakamura pairing is like, Nakamura is such a big star, it feels like they're not even connected.
Yeah, I do really feel that, like, I
mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
No, absolutely not. And like, we've got some things to talk about, like the main event scene of SmackDown Live, such as it is. But I really don't feel that, although Rusev Day is always involved in these matches with AJ and with Nakamura, I don't feel like Rusev is a main eventer on SmackDown Live. He feels like he is still an upper mid card, but is just being used in this role.
Fodder. He's a hot body.
Yeah. And like, and if this leads into a feud between Rusev Day and Gallanderson, then
yes.
that's fine with me. I'm happy with that.
I think that's the way to structure it. You have over the tag titles as well, you get them all in the mix and then that makes more sense why everyone would be working together. But it didn't take away from the match.
Who was the other tag team that got drafted?
The Bar.
Yeah, but there was another tag team that got drafted, didn't they? Did I make this up? I was trying to think. When you said, like, oh, I'm an idiot and I couldn't think who it was. Mm. My first thought it was Gallanderson. They were the two teams that got drafted was Gallanderson and The Bar. Sorry, yep, I'm with you now.
That's what we just said.
No, I know. I was just sitting there thinking, like, who did get drafted last week?
So Nakamura, and they had this, the main event, which was where Nakamura had his new entrance. And it was a decent match, but the finish was very, very cool. At the start, you said when Nakamura, it was Nakamura and AJ, but Nakamura tags out right away. AJ, I love his character because he is this hothead babyface, which is consistent with his heel persona as well, which is why it's also nicely interwoven. AJ just went for Nakamura, even though he tagged out and he beat him up on the apron, which is good. But the finish was really quite masterful. Styles, where are we? So Gallows is distracted, but he's thrown someone outside, but Nakamura got the blind tag, and then Nakamura delivers a Kinshasa to the back of Gallows' head for the win, and then he gives AJ a low blow afterwards, the full-on lift-you-up phenomenal ball arm, and then he's gonna hit AJ with the Kinshasa, but Carl Anderson runs in the way and takes a bullet for AJ, of course, formerly the Bullet Club. Everything works so well contextually. Like, this is, and I love it when they strike this balance, when it works really, really well anyway for someone who knows nothing about the history. But if you know the history and the context, it's incredible.
Yeah, it was really nice. It's funny as well because, like, the commentators are like, oh, he took the bullet. My first thought was just like, oh, yeah, like the Bullet Club, that's quite clever. But I never realized, like, oh, I wonder if that... I didn't look at it as, like, that's all contextual within that. But that actually makes it seem much... That seems cool. I literally just thought, like, oh, he channeled his inner Johnny Gargano and pushed AJ out of the way.
Because, they're all part of that Japanese contingent. Yeah. They all moved over at the exact... Well, not the... Well, yeah, it was the exact same time.
All four
time.
Of them came over at the same time, yeah.
And then Nakamura just has this brilliant bit. AJ is still selling his balls, his phenomenal balls. So he's trying to help Carl, but Carl's knocked out. And Nakamura looks at the scene. He's like, I could give AJ a Kinshasa quite easily here. I'm gonna take out one of his best friends who's just joined him on the brand right in front of him. And Nakamura hits Carl Anderson with the Kinshasa. And just like AJ is fingertips away from pushing Carl out the way. Yeah. He's trying. I really appreciated it all. And it's just incredible stuff. And to be honest, it capped a fantastic episode of SmackDown.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I gave it a Smacktastic in the review. I really enjoyed the show.
I mean, this sounds like we're doing the end of the episode now. But I would give it a high Smacktastic.
Oh, wow.
Well, the only thing really that if this had a great match on, like a good 15-minute match, because really there wasn't any, like, it was just TV matches, right? Or a killer angle. This would have been a SmackDown episode.
It's really funny. SmackDown very rarely has those like long 15-minute matches. Like, and it's not because
they need another hour.
Well, I was about to say, I don't think it is the other hour argument. They just, like, I don't know what it is, but they never have long matches. And it always seems that every one of their matches has an ad break in there to kind of like break things up a little bit. So SmackDown never really feels like it's a wrestling heavy show. Although they have a lot of matches, they never feel like wrestling heavy. They just use their matches very creatively to kind of tell and further storylines, which I really appreciate. And that happened, you know, a lot on this show. I did think it was a really, really decent show, and I particularly love the ending.
The Wrestle Ramble will be right back after these short messages. This episode of Wrestle Ramble is brought to you in part by Patreon. For just $5 a month, you can get access to our Patreon-exclusive podcast, Wrestle Ramble Extra, where Ollie and I review classic pay-per-views from wrestling's past. Previous episodes include Money in the Bank 2011, Armageddon 2000, Wrestle Kingdom 10, WrestleMania 25, and more. The next episode continues the WrestleMania theme with arguably the best Mania ever, WrestleMania X7. Featuring the epic main event of The Rock vs. Stone Cold Steve Austin for the WWF Championship. It also has the Triple H vs. Undertaker match you're supposed to forget happened, and the Gimmick Battle Royal! Your backing will get you access to all previous episodes too. Head on over to patreon.com/WrestleTalk for more information. That's patreon.com/WrestleTalk.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's a SmackDown review, Maggle, I love it. We got us a flying Uso.
So, SmackDown kicked off with a Bruno Sammartino memorial image.
It was nice, yeah. No, nice. Not everyone out on the stage, which I was surprised by.
I think they did it on Raw.
Yeah, no, but it's a different show, man.
It's the B show.
Exactly.
And then the actual episode opened proper with Miz returning to SmackDown Live after a year out on Raw, and with a Miz TV segment. It was meant to be with Daniel Bryan.
Yes, but it was actually with a big cast. Miz cut a long promo at the start of this about his feud with Daniel Bryan, his long-standing feud with Daniel Bryan, about how Miz is a changed man since he's had his daughter Monroe Sky, and he's not a violent man anymore, and he's surprised that Daniel Bryan wants to hashtag punch him in the face. Maybe his connection with his daughter is just not as strong as Miz and Monroe Sky.
Yeah, it was really smarmy. It was I didn't know it was long. I thought it was a good promo.
It was a good promo. I just thought it went really, really long.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that. But I thought he was working the crowd perfectly. It was a hot crowd, as was Monday night as well, which was good.
Planet fans.
Planet fans. Yeah, all the Nakamura boos.
Yeah, exactly.
They got loads of people who couldn't speak Japanese in there. They planted them all. So, he talks about Brian's feud. He had that killer line about Monroe that just, maybe didn't change Brian the way it has me.
Exactly,
It was nicely delivered.
So we were meant to have Miz TV with Daniel Bryan, but instead, Big Cass came out. Now, we said last week, Big Cass is here. Like, maybe he's going to be the Jinder of 2018. Some people said he might be the Baron Corbin of 2018 because he's a big lad, and that's what Vince likes. He likes big lads, and he came in and he took out Daniel Bryan. And we were like, we'll see. We'll see what could happen with Big Cass. When he came out wearing that suit and his hair was tied back, I was like, this dude looks like $1 million.
Oh, really?
And then he cut a heck of a promo.
That was a good promo.
I was like, this is great. Like, I'm really, really sold on this. I mean, in-ring, we'll see what happens. And, you know, I've got some thoughts on the Daniel Bryan feud, which we'll go into shortly. But I did think, like, man, this is a really, really great promo. And it was really good work by Cass.
Yeah, it was a nice attention to detail. He came out first with the suit draped over his back. It's because Daniel Bryan didn't answer for a while, so then Big Cass came out instead. And he had his suit jacket draped over his shoulder. And he slowly put that on at the top of the ramp. And then he put on what I assume is a very expensive watch.
Yeah.
Just a nice attention to detail. And then he gets in the ring. And, I was not enthused about a main event run for Big Cass when you've got such a good scene in SmackDown anyway of other wrestlers. But he did... And I'm still not like... Wow, I can't wait for Big Cass's feuds and programs because I do feel like he is a bit limited in the ring. But this was a good promo.
It was a really good promo.
And it was a promo that gave a lot of context to why he was angry with Brian. That he was out for 7 months. You know, I was overcoming an ACL tear. You're like, well, you know, that's not as severe as actually retiring for 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And then Big Cass is like, I used to be small. But I got big. Like, that was something he worked at. But, of course, it was a natural advantage.
Exactly.
And then he says... So he's got this agenda against small guys, infused by the idea that Brian has stolen some of this adoration that was meant for him. It was a nice motivation.
Yeah, I really like it. But what I particularly like about this segment, what I really, really liked about this whole promo and this kind of segment overall... is that it established that Miz and Cass are not working together on this, which is what some people theorized last week, that maybe Cass will be Miz's bodyguard in the same way that Drew is Dolph's bodyguard, perhaps, in their sort of Raw dynamic. And some people wonder it might be a bit of a Control-C, Control-V situation. But it's not. Like, Miz says, it goes like, Cass, I don't need your help. Like, I don't need your help taking out Daniel Bryan. And Cass was like, it's not always about you. This is about me now. And I was like, oh, this is brilliant. This is literally heels against heels, interconnecting storylines. We've got multiple feuds happening at the same time here. This is really, really great.
This is 2016 SmackDown. Yeah. That's how it was booked. And when you could really enter a feud with anyone because all the heels hated each other. All the faces were also warring with each other because it's all about trying to get that top spot, which feels like lost sometimes when it's just two guys fighting for eternity.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more interconnected, like you said.
Yeah.
Much better way of doing things. Did you see the Birdie versus Monroe sign in the crowd?
I did. Did you see the Swaff Nation sign in the crowd?
No.
Yeah. I spotted it after the Shelton Benjamin match. It was just there at the crowd. Another planted fan.
I hope Randy Orton saw that. I wouldn't know if he did, if he tweeted about it.
Still blocked you.
Yes.
So here's the thing about this Big Cass thing. Because you just said then, you're not looking forward to the Big Cass main event run. And the way that I looked at this, and the way that this kind of sort of set up, and what's happened since the SmackDown after Mania, it feels like this isn't a main event thing. This is an upper mid-card thing. And I get that this feud between Brian and Cass is meant to elevate Cass. They're using Brian to elevate Big Cass. But I really feel that it's actually just taking Brian down. It's not elevating anyone. It's actually dragging Brian away from the main event scene of AJ and Nakamura into this upper mid-card scene, And the SmackDown review, as I called it, has Bryan lost momentum. And it did feel like, you know, it was only a few weeks ago, it was like, Daniel Bryan has returned. He's going to have these feuds and these feuds and these feuds. And then here we are, it's like, and it's Big Cass. And they're having a match at Backlash. And as I said to you earlier, it's like winning the WWE Championship after all those months. And then your first feud is against Kane.
Yeah, it is a derailing of momentum. Not to say that Bryan doesn't have momentum or that this Big Cass segment wasn't excellent.
No.
It's just to say, is this the best use of these two guys? Really, everyone wants to see, and we've waited long enough for Daniel Bryan to be in that main event mix and have a main event level program with someone. Not a Big Cass feud.
Not helping someone, not using your stamp power to try and elevate someone else. It's like, it's not the best use of Daniel Bryan at this point when he's just come back.
Yeah. Like, he needs a hot feud.
Exactly. Yeah. Do it down the line. If you did Daniel Bryan and Big Cass after SummerSlam and you gave Daniel Bryan a really hot feud to come back to when the crowd are super into him at the moment, I think that's a better use of Bryan than putting him into a mid-card feud.
Who would you put him against then? I mean, I get Miz would be the obvious answer. Just for a hot one-month program, just one match, Bryan kills him. Because you pay off on all the animosity beforehand.
Yeah.
And then you go into like a... I don't know, because they do like AJ and Nakamura as their feud.
Yeah, I mean, I would have... Samoa Joe would have been where I...
Samoa Joe,
probably
yeah,
would have gone. And Joe is a perfect, almost like character piece for Samoa Joe, because he'd have come out being like, why is everyone cheering for you coming back? Mm. Like, almost like the Big Cass thing is like, why is everyone cheering for you coming back? I was on the injury shelf. Like, you know, and you know, Joe is the dream killer.
Yeah. That would
have been really cool.
Yeah, so we'll wait.
Yes.
So after the Miz TV segment, Asuka and Becky Lynch were shown walking backstage to gorilla position to come out for their match. But the camera goes, oh no, look, Daniel Bryan's on the floor and there's some people treating him. And this was like the SmackDown of 2016, where everything feels a bit chaotic, like it is just unfolding as it's being filmed rather than carefully plotted out and scheduled beforehand.
And I like this, because I really enjoyed this. You had Becky and Asuka walking down. They were like, oh, coming up next, we've got a tag match. And then, you see Daniel Bryan, and then they go over and check on Daniel Bryan. I like that more than as people are making their exit, or like they've just finished their in-ring segment, someone's music plays, and then because a match is about to take place. Mm. I think it works better in this sort of backstage area than it does in the ring.
Oh yes, yeah, without a doubt.
Just before we move on from that, Cass had a really great line when he was talking about it. He was like mocking Daniel Bryan's like reach for the stars and like believe in your dreams and your dreams will believe in you and all that sort of nonsense. But he's like, I didn't need to wrestle in bingo halls. I didn't need to go to Japan or Europe. I just walked into the job. He's got Baron Corbin's gimmick in NXT.
Yeah,
and I loved Baron Corbin's gimmick in NXT.
So Becky Lynch and Asuka did make their way out eventually. To face the Iconics.
Oh, and the Iconics cut one of their fabulous heel promos to start off with.
It was fun.
Falling over themselves to laugh at their crap jokes and awful impressions. It was so funny.
I got a real Edging Christian vibe from them.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, and then just like, oh, the camera loves you. No, it loves you. No, it loves you. Oh, it just loves us.
Yeah.
Like, it's so funny. And then it's like, and she goes, oh, close your eyes. I'm going to do an impression.
Yeah.
And then she does this awful Irish accent. Billy Kay goes, hello? I'm talking about terrible impressions. And then he goes, hello, is that Becky Lynch? I feel like she's right next to me.
And they,
so good.
They were pointing out how, well, we ended Charlotte's title reign. This is my bad accent now. I think we should do all Iconics review bits in bad accents.
In bad accents.
Well, it's my best accent, actually. I'm just not good at them.
Australian is one of the few that I can't do very
well. We beat Charlotte for a title reign. And that, so really, we beat Asuka.
Yeah,
and they're laughing, and then Peyton Royce, I think, goes, "It's maths."
Yeah, it's just science,
like just a perfect punctuation point to it.
I was gonna say they theorize via science.
Yeah,
because and then like it's great because that kind of helps Corey Graves and Byron Saxton, because Byron Saxton goes like, that doesn't make any sense. And Corey goes like, no, I've done the math. I've looked at the science. It does make complete sense. Do you want to see my workings? So funny.
Corey's so good at the moment. And then they had like a 5-minute-ish match, which was fine, I guess.
Yep.
Speaking of losing momentum, poor old Asuka.
Poor old Asuka, yeah.
And Becky lost when Peyton, she was on the, it was quite a nice finish, actually. Becky was on the apron, and Peyton kind of bumped her into the ring post, and then did a roll-up through the second rope and then used the ropes to leverage herself for a cheating win. So it was it wasn't a clean victory, but and I get that you want to put Iconics over, especially as they lost to Charlotte last week. But ask her, man. Couldn't Naomi wrestle?
Well, no, she's in her own little feud now, isn't she? She's got her own different storyline going on.
But juggling bits.
Do you know what? It's Asuka needed something hot coming out of losing the streak, and apparently their idea for something hot was not being on TV for a couple of weeks and then losing a tag match.
Yeah. It is quite similar to the Daniel Bryan stuff. Like, it's not awful, but is it the best carry-on of momentum? Yeah. You would have thought they would have some better ideas for these, like, your top people. Then we had the AJ Styles backstage bit that we've already talked about, where they get the club back together. Then we had a really good Andrade Cien Almas video package.
Oh, I can't wait for him today. Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
Wonder how he's going to, and when. Maybe after Backlash?
Yeah.
Because he hasn't got a match at Backlash.
Yeah, maybe to challenge Jeff Hardy for the US title.
Yeah, that would be good. And then we got that Usos and Naomi segment backstage, which is Naomi's storyline. And this was also really, really cool. Just making SmackDown feel like a living, breathing world where people do have lives in the locker room area, in the backstage area. It's not just all sterile offices with one picture of
Pure Heart, Pure Country.
Yeah, whatever it was called. But yeah, this was so the Usos were kind of bantering in their locker room, and then Naomi walks in and was like, "I don't think you should go out and face Eric Rowan, Jimmy. Jimmy's her husband, isn't
yes.
That's the one." And Naomi's really putting over the Bludgeon Brothers. She's saying, "When I looked in their eyes last week, when I ran down to help you, I didn't see anything there behind their eyes."
She's like, if I hadn't have come down last week, who knows what would have happened?
Yeah, but Jimmy is playing this off perfectly. Like, just like a flirty, I think this is how me and my lady partner talk to each other, all street-like.
Yes.
And it's, oh, you're so cute when you're angry or worried, babe. Wait, I'm going to go in to kiss you. Get off me. That's my personal experience. But Naomi is like, oh, yeah, thanks. I mean, I love you too, but please don't have this match. Yeah. And Jimmy's like, ah, it'll be fine. And then do a cool handshake, which me and my lady partner
Me and my wife are forever doing like cool handshakes. It's a nightmare when we get in from work, because most of the evening is just taken up by us doing handshakes and whatnot.
Most of our Sunday afternoons are spent coming up with new, cooler handshakes.
Well, you want to have one, a new one every month,
you? You want to debut them at social occasions.
Yeah.
So this was really, really good, and it led directly into Jimmy Uso coming out for his match against Eric Rowan.
Because Jay and Harper had a match last week.
Yes. And this is, I mean, they're doing enough for this not to feel repetitive.
Which is funny, because you were a little bit concerned about this last week, that you were starting to lose a bit of interest in this feud.
And you did say, hey man, they have added Naomi. And I was like, I don't care. But but then this week, I was like, this actually added another dimension to it. So yeah, I'm happy to be wrong. Prove me wrong more, WWE. So the Usos go over to the Make-A-Wish kid at ringside. It was very lovely. But my wrestling mind goes, oh crap, that kid's getting beaten up. The Bludgeon Brothers are going to do an angle with the kid.
Hit him with the mallet.
Yeah, that's all. It's all a work, brother. They're plants. So that didn't happen, which is for the best. But Jay was taken out by Luke at ringside very early on. Mm-hmm. And then Eric's fighting Jimmy
Luke Harper,
in the ring.
Not me.
Yes, Luke didn't run in. But Jimmy got the better of Rowan for a bit. And it was quite exciting. Very short match, but it was exciting.
Yeah, this match only went about 90 seconds. You know, if at all, it maybe went 2 minutes. But it did, like, they crammed a lot into that. Like, it felt very chaotic. It felt really good. It made me kind of, like, look forward to their match this coming Friday when I eventually watch the pay-per-view, whenever that happens. But it was a really, like, cool thing. I quite enjoyed it.
And then
all of a sudden Naomi's music hits.
Well, this is when Eric started to dominate. Looked like things were going to go bad for Jimmy,
and Naomi's music hit and she came out doing her full Naomi entrance. And at first I thought, like, if you're going to make a save, don't do your entrance.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Just run down, mate. Just do that. But she was doing it to cause a distraction, because you turn around and they've got Harper and Rowan standing there going like, what's going on? And then Jimmy runs in, bit of a kick to Eric Rowan, rolls him up, and gets the win. I think that's the Bludgeon Brothers' first loss
Probably is, you know.
Yeah, so they haven't lost as a team, but that's their first loss, one of them, since coming back as the Bludgeon Brothers. And then they all celebrated, the three of them together. And I was like, hey! And then I thought, it's a chain name. He's not going to be there Friday.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, good point. It was a nice way to build the match on Friday. Like, usually, the idea of the champions losing before the pay-per-view, I don't really care. But this worked. This worked very well. And I did like all of this. Now, what I'm concerned about is, I don't think this is where they're going, but they could go this way. And that is, Bludgeon Brothers just have the, we are like big zombie brutish cavemen. Ooh, colourful woman.
Yeah, like King Kong.
And that's why they're getting distracted, rather than just like, we are badasses. What is this nuisance? Nuisance is over. Ah, Jimmy's won. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just like, sometimes, have you seen Luke Harper's tweets?
Yes, I saw them. I saw your news episode.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe he's kind of like being a bit creepy about Naomi and Jimmy's relationship. So I just hope it doesn't go a weird route.
For a second, I thought you were going to say, I hope that Naomi doesn't turn heel and align herself with her Bludgeon Brothers.
Be a shocker.
And that'd be out of nowhere.
And I strongly advise against that for Jimmy, because don't involve storyline breakups for real marriages.
Because it always works out for the best, Dolly. What are you talking about? It always works out.
Next up, we had Carmella having a Carmella tract signing.
Almost.
There was a contract signing.
Speaking of Naomi not being there on Friday, did you also hear Byron Saxton's announcements?
Byron isn't going to be there.
No, Byron is hosting the pre-show, because obviously Renee Young won't be allowed to...
She's not even competing.
No, I know, but so Byron...
I thought it was more about women couldn't compete in the ring.
Well, I don't know, but Byron is hosting the pre-show with JR, King and Booker T as their Legends panel.
Well, hey, that's great. I love Byron. So maybe who really is Byron Saxton? It's Renee Young in her kind of gender-bending costume.
Yeah, maybe.
It's all... it's like Shakespeare in Love. She dresses up like a man to host the social media lounge.
That's Charlie Caruso's job. That's not Renee's job.
She won't be there either, then.
No, she won't be there either. Was she the one who did an interview?
I don't know.
She came on screen. I was like, I don't know who that is.
I think it was Dasher.
Was that Dasher?
I don't know. I've written down Dasher in my notes.
I've written down, someone did an interview, I don't know who it was. It very well could have been Dasher, but I swear she changes every single time she's on screen.
Charlie's got a rounder face. Dasher's is a bit squarer.
I'm pretty sure I know which one Charlie Caruso is.
Okay,
I think she only does Raw, which would make me think it is Dasher.
But Renee Young does it. Maybe these were superstar shook-ups.
Maybe.
So, yes, Carmella and contract had a Charlotte signing. And Renee Young's in the ring. Carmella comes out and cuts an incredible heel
promo.
She
was wonderful.
She was so much fun here.
Because she was upset about, the Mellabration being ruined last week. But she was also upset that Renee Young had the gall to call the champion out first when the challenger should be coming out first. So she was annoyed at that. And then she cut a promo on the crowd saying, like, guys, I showed you a really good video package last week and you didn't applaud it. So guess what? We're going to watch it again. So they watched the whole video again. And it's one of those things where, like, WWE have this... They often will just, like, repeat video packages. And they were like, okay, so we had this video package, like the Black History Month video you took such umbrage with. You know, they play this over and over and over again. But Carmella is the heel playing this over and over and over again. And it's like, oh, I don't want to see this video again. And then crowd boo. And she was like, no, guys, you're missing something. Standing ovation. You're meant to applaud. So guess what? We're just going to watch it again. And my favourite moment from this is, she goes, we're going to watch it again. And Corey Graves goes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I can't wait to see this again.
It's like, he goes, I could watch it all night.
Yeah.
I could watch it for the rest of the show.
It was really good. And she got some serious heat off the back of this. Carmella is she really gets some good reactions.
Carmella was tremendous. In this entire segment, she was so good. Because Charlotte interrupted the second time the video was playing, and she made her entrance. And Charlotte was really great in this. Like, credit to Charlotte as well, because she was barely acknowledging Carmella's existence. She was, like, looking at her nails. She was kind of looking at anything else. Because Carmella then just started dancing around the ring. She was, like, parading the title in front of her, going, like, look what I've got, look what I've got. Doing the strut, going woo. And then Renee Young's like, Carmella, like, can you act like a champion and please sit down? And Carmella responded to that by more posing and taunting. It was so good. She was just acting like a complete knob. And Charlotte just was not responding to it. She was as cool as Vanilla Ice. She just was not reacting to this whatsoever.
Yeah, and then she calmly signs the contract and goes, woo, into Carmella's face. And Carmella, like, gets into her face. And Charlotte awesomely grabs Carmella's head and rams it into the quite hard-looking table.
I think it was marble on that
table.
Yeah,
and it was really, really good. And as we're talking about it now, I think I've realised why. Because Charlotte didn't say any rubbish scripted promo from WWE.
She was not talking about magic and fairies and whatnot. She came down and she smashed her face into a table.
Perfect.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah, and she looked so stately. I thought Charlotte carried herself very well here.
And it was funny as well, because when she, like, smashed her head into a table, she almost, like, composed herself to be like, sorry, whoops.
Yeah.
That was a bit out of character for me. I'm just going to walk to the back now.
And, like, I wasn't really into Carmella versus Charlotte, but now I am. Like, I was into Carmella as champion. Of course, I like Charlotte. But I didn't really care about their match or feud together. Mm-hmm. But now I'm into it. This was good.
Yeah.
Then there was a Nakamura interview backstage, but Aiden English said no interviews. This is where we think it was Dasher. Then Shelton Benjamin took on Randy Orton. Benjamin was already in the ring, but then Jeff Hardy makes his entrance.
Yeah, well, they actually showed Jeff walking backstage, being like, Jeff Hardy and Shelton Benjamin are going to have a rematch from last week.
Oh, right, yeah, I thought that's what I heard.
Yes, and then Jeff Hardy made his entrance, but it was a receipt from last week because Shelton offered an open challenge and Randy came out, but it was interrupted by Jeff. This time, Jeff had the match and Randy Orton interrupted and said, I'm going to have the match next. But what I loved about this, Jeff Hardy's doing his big entrance with his hands, doing the Kurt Angle limp wristing. And limp wristed.
Like, I love that band.
Yeah. and Randy just sort of, like, walks past me. He doesn't look at Jeff, but stops next to him just long enough to be like, yeah, I've done this.
Well,
even looking at him.
He was looking directly at him in terms of monitors backstage. Yeah. Yes. Their peripheral vision is so good in WWE.
Good.
It's like a freaking lizard.
It's like a big IMAX.
Yeah.
But this is really cool. And then Shelton Benjamin and Randy Orton had a match. Todd Phillips, at one point, actually, which I thought was a really nice touch, mentioned that they both graduated from the OVW class of 2002.
Oh, Shelton. Yeah.
Cool. That was a really nice touch, and I was like, man, that was 16 years ago. Mm. That's an awful long time ago. But this was a fun little match.
Yeah,
fun little TV outing.
Solid.
It was solid.
Jeff was on commentary for the match, or at least he was sitting at ringside, but he was attacked by a masked luchador.
Instantly, I was like, oh my God, Almas is here.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well. He had the similar height, but not the build. And the luchador.
Similar height, we talked about Daniel Singh's like 4 foot nothing.
Similar height. he tried to run away, but he ended up in the ring, this luchador, and Randy pulls off the mask. It is Sunil Singh. I really like that.
That was great.
Because Jinder's such a dickhead that he sent Singh to do his dirty work over on the other brand.
But it's great as well because Jeff was selling the leg injury from last week in the match he had with Shelton Benjamin while making his entrance before this match. And Sunil's given him the chop block to that same leg, telling a story that Jeff is now going into this match against Jinder Mahal at Greatest Royal Rumble with a leg injury.
It was a really nice way to build up multiple feuds across two brands and the Greatest Royal Rumble and Backlash.
Made even better, Shelton Benjamin won the match. He pinned Randy Orton. Mm. So now that kind of inserts him into this United States Championship picture. And that's a win that elevates Shelton. It doesn't devalue Randy, it elevates Shelton.
Because Randy took out Sunil Singh, but not on an announcer's desk.
No, well, he saved that for Shelton Benjamin, didn't he? Yeah. Gave him the backdrop instead.
Then we had New Day and The Bar coming face-to-face for the first time on SmackDown.
Apparently New Day have a book out.
Do they? Well, is that what they were talking about?
Apparently,
yeah,
although,
I kind of switch off sometimes.
Although, apparently, I looked on Amazon. It's been out since November last year.
It's still out.
Maybe I've not been paying attention, but I think they kept that quiet.
You would think they would come down to the ring chucking books into the crowd. Hardcovers. One for your eye. One for your abdomen.
Putting them inside the bootios boxes and then just pouring them onto kids at ringside. Ow, ow, ow. Being hit by all these books. But yeah, they were, you know, just doing their nonsense backstage and they had pancakes and cups of bootios or glasses of bootios instead of wine. Mm-hmm. And then The Bar walked in. And this is where I was like, huh? Because what the bar said was that if when we win at Greatest Royal Rumble and win the Raw Tag Team titles, we're going back to Raw.
Huh.
And I was like, oh, is that the rule now?
No one knows. No, they make it up.
I mean, I know, and I said this in the SmackDown review, so apologies if you've watched that and then watched this and are just hearing me repeat myself. I know this is a very expensive house show that we're not meant to care about, but I really do wish the kind of rules between these cross-brand matches had been made clearer so that we could, I don't know, care about the results.
Mm. Get invested in the build.
Get invested, man, maybe.
Yeah. So next up was AJ Styles and the Club back together in the locker room.
Yep.
That was nice to see.
Bit of sound issues, but it was nice to see the Club back together. Because I really liked the Club when they were the three-man unit.
I, weirdly, like in my head, I've always been like Finn Balor and Gallanderson. That's where the money is. But seeing these three back together, I'm like, oh, what am I talking about? These three were so good together.
Yeah, it's because AJ isn't made to smile like a goofball all the time.
Maybe it's because AJ is perfectly fine by himself, but Finn is just floundering by himself, yeah. I think. Daniel Bryan was next. He comes out of the trainer's room because he was being treated from being beaten down earlier on in the show. And he cuts a really good babyface promo about how he was attacked by a 7-foot coward from behind, and he now has a match against Big Cass at Backlash, and everyone is the same height when they're tapping out on the mat.
Nice stuff.
We
also got a video package for Sanity, who are also coming soon.
So this confirmed, back to the Daniel Bryan thing, that Cass was the one who attacked him.
Yes, yeah, he did.
But he said he was attacked from behind.
Oh, interesting.
Well, I just like, you know, usually I wouldn't be surprised if Cass came out next week and said, hey, I don't like you, Brian, but I didn't attack you.
That'd be great.
Yeah, you're like, ooh, more intrigue.
Hmm.
That's maybe a spot for Almas.
Perhaps.
Sets up Samoa Joe's first post-Reigns feud. So hopefully they go that way. But, you know, it's fine if they don't.
Yeah.
Then we got that Samoa Joe promo. He was hyping Greatest Royal Rumble and his Backlash match. And he was looking directly into the camera.
No words on screen either, because the words on screen got drafted to Raw.
Yeah, and can you imagine Samoa Joe with words on screen? It's not right. He sounded huskier than normal.
Sexier.
Yeah, sexier. And then we had the main event, which we've already kind of covered.
Yeah, which was really good. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very, very good episode of SmackDown Live. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And it was, you know, a pretty lackluster Raw. It's been three... I know you've got the post-WrestleMania call-ups and surprise returns of Lashley and fun like that, and then you've got the intrigue of what happens with the superstar shakeup the following week, but really it's pretty superficial stuff on Raw, and the first week that Raw didn't have those gimmicks, it sucked. I thought it was pretty lousy Raw this week. SmackDown has been SmackDam. I guess like 5 out of 5 Raw after Mania, 4 out of 5 last week, 4 out of 5 again here. Really, really solid programming.
It's been really, as I said in the review, Raw feels like it's been on pause up until Greatest Royal Rumble and Backlash. And it just feels like the Raw team was like, oh, let's just do these and then we'll start doing stuff. Like, but SmackDown is like, no, we're just going to do all our storylines, but weave them in and out of these two pay-per-views that we've just got, these two hills that we have to get past first. But we're going to set up all of these feuds, juggle all these balls, and spin all these plates. And I think they're doing a really good job of it.
Well, SmackDown has effectively been on pause since last August.
Since the Superstar Shake-Up last year, I would almost
argue. Yeah, so... But can they only press play on one brand at a time?
Yeah, maybe.
I hope not, because it's just baffling to me how you can create such good programming on one brand and not do it on the other.
If this is the case, if it is going to feel like Raw is, they just haven't got anything this year, and they become what SmackDown was last year, where it's just like it's the same people doing the same thing over and over and over again, I'm going to feel really sorry for Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn.
Yeah.
Because they were on Raw during that period last time while SmackDown was great. Then they jumped over to SmackDown when it was stuck in that rut and Raw was actually really, really good.
Mm.
Now they've gone back to Raw, which appears to be stuck in a rut, while SmackDown's really great. Poor Lance just cannot catch a break. Whereas The Miz has had the best of luck.
Yeah.
Because he's jumped back and forth when it's always good. Maybe it's The Miz. Maybe.
Maybe.
In a bizzle.
Yeah, that's what kids say. So, again, we've done that thing Well, for us, the intro and outro are right next to each other. But for everyone listening, there was a whole hunk of SmackDown review in the middle.
There was like 40 minutes worth of us talking about Shinsuke Nakamura and phenomenal ball arms. But for us, it was 2 seconds ago.
Yeah, so of course we left you with the words, inner bizzle. And now Luke is taking issue with my bizzles.
I'm not sure I'm taking issue with your bizzles. It caught me by surprise.
I say it all the time, man. I don't know why you're so pouncing on it all of a sudden. So yes, we saw Avengers Infinity War last night in Leicester Square in London.
In the Cineworld in Leicester Square.
Yes.
We had a bit of a... Yeah, I mean, maybe we should just talk a little bit about the experience of going... Because Thanos Demands Your Silence is like sort of the marketing gimmick that they're going with this film.
Hashtag
Thanos Demands Your Silence. It even has like a little image that props up when you use it.
Demands
your silence.
Does it have a little Thanos? Yeah. Little purple guy.
Little purple guy comes up when you type in Thanos Demands Your Silence. And so we had our tickets and we got there. The doors opened at 6. You and I arrived at about 10 to 6, maybe?
Casually. It was bang on 6.
More or less bang on 6. The doors hadn't quite opened yet, but also we hadn't posted up the Wrestle Ramble. So I quickly booted up my laptop.
In the queue. In the middle of Leicester Square.
Yep, and... got out my phone, tethered it to the 4G, and we posted the Wrestle Ramble there and then.
Well, you posted it. I valiantly went off and got me food.
Yeah, you had
left you in the queue
doing
this.
You had a bit of a worry that you weren't going to be able to eat anything.
Yeah, I just didn't want to, because it was a long movie.
Two
and a half hours. We were going to be waiting in the cinema for at least an hour and a quarter for it to start.
Yes, because although the doors opened at 6, the film didn't start until 7.
Yeah, so I'm not doing that without a full tum-tum. So ran to Pret, got me a ham and cheese sandwich, a flapjack. Happy days.
So we got into the cinema. We actually managed to... like. Because it's in the Cineworld in Leicester Square. If you've not been there before, it's separated into two screens. Screen number one is the IMAX screen. That's the one where a lot of people tend to go to the cinema when they go to the Cineworld in Leicester Square, because it's the giant IMAX. But upstairs is the Impact screen, which is slightly smaller, but it is still very grand and very impressive.
And Don Callis does commentary up there.
He does, yeah. Him and Scott D'Amore are basically behind the scenes, making sure everything is... like, they're the ones who make sure that the films go on time.
Scott Steiner will randomly walk out in front of the crowd.
Yep.
Dressed as Thanos. He'd be a good Thanos.
He would be a good Thanos. And just, ha! Just doing that a lot. We got... There's kind of two tiers to it. So I knew it. I know it quite well, that screen, because that's where they hold Fright Fest, and that's where they put the journalists.
You are obsessing over the screen. I mean, like, when you said, let's talk about our overall experience, I didn't think you were going to go in-depth, play-by-play, minute-by-minute. I think people want to hear about the movie. We're 3 minutes in.
Not minute-by-minute. I was just thinking, like, because we found some seats that were downstairs.
Right.
But then we were quite close to the front.
It wouldn't have been a comfortable viewing.
No, we leant back and we're like, well, these do lean back a bit, but... And I was like, do you know what? There's the balcony. You go check the balcony. I'll hold these seats in case we need them. And then I got a text message from you, and you had found, oh, perfect seats. There's three rows up on the balcony, middle balcony, bang in the middle. Oh, mate, what seats you found?
Reconnaissance. That's my skill set. Yeah, it was good. So the actual movie...
Should we actually talk about the movie?
Well, I guess all of that is make sure you get a seat that's in a comfortable place, because it is 2.5 hours long. You don't want to get a cricked neck by the end of it.
It is a long old film. Safety wheeze are very much advised. So this is going to be very, very spoiler-free, because Disney sent us emails on the day of the screening saying, like, hey, when you're doing your reviews, no spoilers whatsoever. A lot of sites, Flickr and Myth, the site that you and I used to help run and still sometimes write for, we used to post up, like, hey, here's what the post-credits of these films are. They were asking, like, don't talk about post-credits, don't talk about anything. Like, even if there is a post-credits, don't talk about anything like that. Just... talk about the film and your feelings on the film and what you think about the film. Don't go into any plot specifics. But, you know, there are certain websites that can ignore that and somehow still get away with it, I think.
Because Luke's throwing some shade
here. Because the Hollywood Reporter's review. The Hollywood Reporter's review, the opening of it, I would say is maybe the third to last line of the movie. Like, that's their opening.
Wow.
That's their opening gambit.
The oh my God, it's Batman. That line. Yeah. That was a shocker.
That was a shocker. So yeah, like, they open with that line. And Forbes posted up an article that was not even a review. It was literally just
Luke. Why can't we talk about the film? You're talking about everything else apart from the film. You've gone too much the other way.
But I wanted to just specify that we're not going to be those
people.
It's called a disclaimer, Ollie Davis.
But it's a freaking 7 minute long disclaimer at the moment. I want to talk about the movie. I'm going a bit insane here because we've just been able to talk to each other. I don't want to be in this state. I want to talk to everyone about it.
I'm in the same boat. Like, I mean, I don't want to go off topic again, but when
don't go off topic again.
But when I went to the Avengers press screening
it's not even the right film now.
But same franchise. When I saw Avengers in 2012, that was 2 weeks before the film came out. I had 2 weeks where I couldn't talk to anyone about it. I didn't know anyone was at the screening. I was going out of my mind. I'm just so glad it's only a few days. Not only that, but I went with you, so at least you and I could talk about it. And you and I spoke about it quite a bit this morning. We were texting each other about it last night. I haven't stopped thinking about this film. So here's my review of the film. It's a freaking masterpiece. Like, it really is an absolute masterpiece of cinema. Here's the short and curly of my thoughts. There has never been a film like Avengers Infinity War before. There will never be another film like it.
Oh, I disagree on the second part. I think there'll be many films like it trying to capitalize off the back of it. Not with the same amount of gravitas of a decade of stuff going into it.
That's what I mean. There will be attempts, but there will never be a film like this.
You just wait till that G.I. Joe universe gets off the ground, man.
Yeah.
So I agree. We spoke about it and we both said, you know, once we regained our breath,
yes,
after the entire credits, we watched every single name go past. What's that, like 10 minutes?
And easily then upwards.
And then the little bit at the end, yes, stay around until the end because there is, as usual, a post-credit sequence, an end credits, the endest of end credits.
Mm-hmm.
And we were silent for a few more minutes and we just went, that's a masterpiece. And I spoke to my lady partner on the phone afterwards and I said, you said frickin'. I said a stronger version of an F word.
I'll be honest, I self-censored myself.
Yeah.
But it is an absolute...
It's a five-star movie.
It's incredible. Like, the Russo brothers have done an amazing job of balancing so many characters. There is an untold amount of characters within this movie. Yet it never feels like the Russo brothers struggle to keep all of those characters and keep all of those plates spinning, every single one of those plates, because it's not just there's loads of characters, there's loads of plot threads as well. And the Russo brothers never feel like one of those plates never feels like it bobs. They always feel like they're just spinning absolutely perfectly in place, and it just makes for an absolutely captivating cinematic experience. Because just when you think you know where the film is going, it just like it zigs and it zaps in other directions, and then before you know it, you're like, I don't know where we're going. I don't know what's happening next. I was left in stunned silence at the end of the film.
One of the greatest parts of the first Star Wars movie that loads of people applauded it for was the ability to cross-cut between, or Return of the Jedi, I think it was, cross-cut between multiple action sequences during the final third. And that, you know, it builds tension. You cut from this thing happening over there to this thing happening over here. It's all working towards the same mission end goal. And That's like the 70s, 80s version of what's happening here, because now you've got all of this context and 18 films, 10 years of Marvel movies behind Infinity War, and what you get is more akin to Game of Thrones. The way Game of Thrones can go across its very expansive, complicated, detailed universe that it's set up and show you a scene of these people over there, a scene of these people in another realm. And they'll be talking to each other. And you know what everyone's motivations are, who the characters are, what's going on, where people are, what the time is. And they do that level of complexity that I thought was only reserved for TV shows, where you can tell an hour installments weekly. They've done it in a movie for 2.5 hours. It's incredible. It is So I was thinking about it today. Avengers, the first one, is an Avengers movie. Avengers Age of Ultron is an Avengers movie. Captain America Civil War, let's be honest, is an Avengers movie. Infinity War, just because it adds in the Guardians of the Galaxy side of things and the magical universe with Doctor Strange, because everyone's in it, it's an event. It's a comic book event movie. That's the like Avengers felt like that was a team up, you know, because you get comics, you get the monthlies, and then you get these team up issues, and then you get the big crisis events. You've got Crisis on Infinity, Infinite Crisis in DC, and then you've got like Secret Wars and stuff like that in Marvel Comics, and or Civil War in Marvel Comics, and you don't really get any like solo character stuff. The thrills come from all these characters being together in one big setting, doing huge blockbuster action pieces. And that's what this is. It's an event comic book series in a movie. It's historic.
Yeah, and while watching it, within like the first sort of, you know, 5-10 minutes of the film, I suddenly thought to myself, like, this does feel like reading an event comic. Like when you get those event comics and you read through your first couple of pages and then you jump over to something else and you're like, oh, these paths are meeting and they will meet and they will go over here and they will do this. It's an absolute masterstroke. And like the challenge of making this film is enormous. Like it's like unparalleled, really, with the amount that I've had to do and the amount they've had to balance and all these different storylines that we've all been leading to this point. And there was every chance that they could have buggered this up. It was every chance they could have dropped some of the balls. There was every chance that one of those plates might have fallen. And it doesn't. And they nail it.
They not only nail it, because it's a huge risk. So like, it seems like a sure bet because you've got all the 10 years of movies leading up to it, but really this is a huge, huge risk still. And not only have they pulled it off and gone for this, they've swung for the moon,
mm-hmm.
and they've hit the moon, which is like, that's a feat in itself. But then they have turned the moon into Empire Strikes Back. Yeah. Then they have pulled the moon down on top of someone, you
know?
So it's like, not only have they been brave to accomplish this movie, the tone and story and direction of the MCU through this film and at the end of this film is just astoundingly brave.
And I mean, there were multiple times where I yelled at the screen.
And
I don't often yell during movies. I'm often a very quiet, unless I'm laughing or if I, you know, the film makes me jump. But I'm usually quite a quiet film watcher. It's not like when you and I went to go and see Creed and you were essentially boxing along with Creed.
Hey, I'd have a few glasses of vino. You should see me in a Fast and Furious movie. Hug people next to me.
And exactly. But like I couldn't help myself. I swore audibly several times throughout the film. I gasped a lot and I cheered at even more. I was having an absolute whale of a time. The film is also very funny. And I have criticised the MCU a lot over the years for, I blame Joss Whedon for this, for their having to end scenes with a punchline. Even if it's a really dramatic scene, you have to end it with a punchline. And there are times in this film where there is perhaps an unnecessary punchline. However, when this film needs to have its dramatic moments, and it needs those character beats that are important to the story and the universe and everything else within the film, they don't steer towards comedy. They play it completely straight. And those are the best scenes in the film.
Yeah. It's quite something. The gasps you were making, there was one point, and it's particularly cool. I think everyone will know what it is when they do finally watch it. Luke just went, "Oh, yeah!" Like Macho Man was sitting next to me.
I couldn't help myself, man. It erupted out of me.
Added to the moment, I think.
And do you know what? We haven't even talked about what is perhaps the best thing about the film, which is Josh Brolin.
Yes. Thanos is such a cool villain with such... So we were talking in the SmackDown review about how good Baron Corbin's motivation is.
Not Baron Corbin.
Sorry, Big yes. Didn't even try to make that mistake. That was a genuine Freudian entry. How good Baron Cass is.
Baron Cass.
Baron Cass. His That sounds like a Hydra member now. Baron Cass's promo and motivation for his feud with Daniel Bryan is, man, Thanos, that is nothing compared to Thanos' motivation and character arc throughout the movie.
So, it's wonderful. It is, okay, way back when you and I used to do our old movie podcast, I remember once pitching to you how, like, what my hope is for Avengers Infinity War. I think it was just Avengers 3 at that point. I don't think they actually announced that it was called Infinity War. And I said to you, what I really hope it is a Thanos solo movie. And in some ways, this does feel like it's Thanos's movie.
Yes.
And like it's not a Thanos solo movie, but it's like he is arguably the main character.
There's an argument to be made.
And
yes.
And Josh Brolin's performance is just stunning. It's absolutely incredible. Made even more impressive when you know the behind the scenes thing that because of the scheduling issues he had between this and Deadpool 2 and all of the Deadpool 2 reshoots that also happened, he was very rarely on set with everyone else during Infinity War. He did the majority of this on his own. And when you consider that he was acting against nothing, he's a marvel.
Yeah.
Like, no pun intended. He is a marvel.
It's great. It's why Michael Caine's best performance is Christmas Muppets Christmas Carol. he's acting against Muppets.
Yeah.
There's no one there.
He's awesome. Downey Jr. is really great. Tom Holland is really great. Chris Evans is really great. Like, there are some characters you can argue that don't really get a lot to do.
I tell you what, the one thing that stood out to me as a criticism, as great as everyone is across the board, Wanda's accent.
Oh, well, she does dip in and out.
Yeah, but it was. I mean, I don't want to say less obvious in this movie, because that's the problem. That
yeah.
Her accent was kind of dropped at parts.
Because in Age of Ultron, Ollie is talking about Elizabeth Olsen, who I'm almost certain...
Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, I'm almost certain. I don't have definitive proof on this, but I'm almost certain she's an actual angel. I don't have definitive proof, but I'm pretty sure she's an actual angel. Either that or she was molded from clay, you know, to just be just the most perfectly beautiful person I've ever seen.
It's the kind of woman Luke goes for, whereas I'm more of a Dana Brooke guy.
But she, in Age of Ultron, she's pretty much, I am the Scarlet Witch, and here is my brother, the Quicksilver, and we do not like the Tony Stark. And she's very much like, but then I remember watching Captain America Civil War, and right at the start of that, as soon as she spoke, I was like, oh, it looks like the Russo brothers just took it to one side. I was like, don't do the accent.
Yeah.
You can't keep it up. Just don't do it.
Maybe they were just trying to phase it out.
That's it. It was a slowly phasing out, because every now and again, she'd kind of slip into it. It was like, no, just on this take, just do a normal accent.
Maybe it's an incredibly nuanced journey of her. Because, you know, Civil War was 2 years ago. They keep referencing those events as being 2 years ago to Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
When it came out last year, didn't it?
No, 2 years ago.
Wow, was it 2 years ago?
Yeah. The Marvel timeline is more... The only one that really doesn't make sense is Spider-Man Homecoming.
Right.
Because that starts with the end of the war for the Battle of New York in the Avengers. And then it pops up. The title card then says 8 years later, which would suggest it takes place in 2020. But Kevin Feige has said in interviews that was a mistake. It wasn't meant to say 8 years. It was meant to say 5 years later. Because it's meant to take
place. Nice one, Sony.
Yeah, I know. But it was meant to take place in the year it came out. It was meant to take place in 2017.
So which would mean Ultron, when Scarlet Witch first came into this, was 4 years ago?
Yes.
So, you know, 4 years living in America, still kind of kayfabe a teenager. Realistically, a 35-year-old woman.
Mm-hmm. Still an angel.
Still an angel. Realistically, always an angel. Anyway, it's very good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to see it as fast as humanly possible again.
I have to see it again.
I'm watching it tomorrow evening.
I want to see it again. I want to see it multiple, multiple, multiple times. You and I discussed yesterday that we were seeing history.
Like this. Yes.
The Marvel Cinematic Universe doesn't matter to everyone. I get that. And I get that there are DC fans who just want to say it's rubbish for the sake of saying it's rubbish because they want to believe that Batman v Superman was a good film.
Because people like tribes.
Because people like tribes. They like, you know, attaching themselves to certain things. But I also get that there are people that just like, nah, it's not for me. And I don't get it. And that's fine. This is very important to me. As a comic book reader my whole life, these were the sort of films that I could only dream would ever happen. And I'm very, I just, every time it comes up and like these happen, I'm like, I can't believe I get to live through this. And I get to go to the cinema and live through this in this moment. And then you and I yesterday were talking on the tube there. I've said to you in the past that, like, when I bring a child into this world, I get to kind of like relive it all again through them. It's our Star Wars. It's the film that I'll be able to show to my kids and be like, hey, look at this amazing 20 movie series. Let's sit down and watch it all together over a long weekend. We'll just watch them all back to back and it'll be wonderful. Your mum, she can pop in and out because she doesn't like some of them.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, I couldn't put it better myself. It's incredible. It's an actual historic moment as opposed to Michael Cole's many weekly historic moments. But that is all we've got time for today. We will be back on Saturday with our news mailbag crap gimmicks fun and on Sunday for some fantasy booking warfare.
So if you thought we're going to do an episode on the Greatest Royal Rumble, we're not.
Luke's away. I might try and record something Friday night.
Yeah.
Depending on how much CrossFit kicks my ass. Why is it always Daniel Bryan comes out of retirement while I'm at CrossFit?
Yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully we get all the best title changes ever.
Well, maybe. Well, with some of them, we know we're guaranteed to get new champions at the very least, at least one match. But, we'll see you on Saturday and on Sunday. And until then, I love you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.